Thank you, Jonga, and blessing. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, February 16, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande.
And I'm Jonga Kandemiri.
Here are our top stories this evening.
The European Union gives Zimbabwe close to $270 million, the first direct aid to President Robert Mugabe's government since the bloc imposed sanctions in 2002.
We will try to commit more than half of the National Indicative Program this year, helping the government kickstarting its reform agenda, underpinning our common commitment to move forward, to stop economic and social decline, and to give hope to the people of this country.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission chairperson says the commission is now in charge of the country's voter registration and not the Registrar General Tobaiwa Mudede's office, as preparations for by-elections to fill former Vice President Joyce Mujuru's seat, among others, continues.
Briefing Parliament's Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Portfolio Committee on the Commission's preparedness for the by-elections, Makarau said they would not use the discredited Registrar General Combined Register, but they carried out their own registration from 26 January to 10 February.
We have started off with a pilot project for these two constituencies and the two by-elections. It is our hope that once we have gotten it right with these two constituencies, then we roll out a nationwide.
And political temperatures are rising again in the ZANU-PF party, with the return of First Lady Grace Mugabe from the Far East, paving the way for the disciplinary hearing of the party's former Secretary for Administration, Didmus Mutasa, for alleged insubordination and bringing the name of the party in disrepute.
The European Union is giving close to $270 million to Zimbabwe, the first direct aid to President Robert Mugabe's government since the bloc imposed sanctions in 2002. The aid package unveiled in Harare today will fund healthcare, agriculture, and good governance projects over the next 6 years. For years, the EU has funneled aid to Zimbabwe through third-party groups because of documented corruption and human rights abuses by Mugabe officials and allies. Following pressure from African nations, the EU has gradually lifted travel and financial restrictions on Zimbabwean officials, but the sanctions for President Mugabe and his wife Grace remain in effect. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
The European Union and the government of Zimbabwe today signed the National Indicative Programme, a joint cooperation strategy between Harare and Brussels that will be funded by the 11th European Development Fund between 2014 and 2020. Speaking at the signing ceremony in Harare Monday, EU Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Philippe Van Dam, said he hoped that the resources would be put to good use, adding that he expects Harare to institute some democratic reforms.
We agreed with the government and the National Authorizing Officer that we would try to commit more than half of the National Indicative Program this year, helping the government kickstarting its reform agenda, underpinning our common commitment to move forward, to stop economic and social decline, and to give hope to the people of this country.
To ensure that there was better cooperation between Harare and Brussels, Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa says the EU should immediately lift sanctions on President Robert Mugabe and his wife Grace, imposed in 2002 for alleged election rigging and human rights violations. Last November, the EU struck off the sanctions list most senior officials of Mr. Mugabe's administration, but only the president and his wife remained.
This signing ceremony, Your Excellency, is a significant step towards normalization of our relations. While we have taken these significant steps towards normalization, we must remain cognizant of the fact that there is still unfinished business. Zimbabwe Incorporated, I'm talking here of Zimbabwe, the economy, has a chief executive. And as long as the chief executive remains under sanctions, our relations remain poisoned and unproductive. I therefore take this opportunity to call for the unconditional lifting of sanctions against our head of state, His Excellency, and the First Lady.
Political analyst Ernest Mudzengi, director of the Media Center, tells Studio 7 that the restrictive measures were not serving any purpose towards the revival of the country's economy.
This government of President Robert Mugabe continues to use those restrictions as an excuse for its failure to turn around the economy. You know, whenever something is presented pertaining to the issue of the economic crisis, this government says this is a result of sanctions. So I think it would be better if the European Union unconditionally lift those restrictions on President Mugabe and any other that may be remaining, so that the truth can be seen for what it is.
Meanwhile, Willard Manungo, permanent secretary in the finance ministry, who is also the authorization officer of the joint strategy signed today, says the development assistance provided by the EU will be channeled towards agriculture and health sectors, as well as strengthening governance institutions in order to strengthen the rule of law through institutional capacity building.
Zimbabwe is said to benefit to the extent of 234 million euro worth of programs and projects under the 11th EDF. And the allocations will be in the area of health, there's 88 million euro. In the area of agriculture-based economic development, there's 88 million euro. Then governance and institution building, there's 45 million euro. Then there's 6 million euro for civil society. Then there's 4 million for the technical cooperation facility. Then another 3 million for the national authorizing office.
The EU says that under this agreement, 6 million euros were set aside for civil society and the money will be channeled through government. But Terry Mutanga, director of the Coalition Against Corruption, says he fears that some of this money will not reach the non-governmental organizations.
There's been a lot of mistrust, and I can see a situation whereby some civic society or most of the civic societies in the country won't receive any cent from the government.
The decision by the EU to channel the funds through Treasury also come at a time when a number of local civil society organizations are being investigated by the Washington administration for misuse of funds allocated to them for their work in Zimbabwe. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission Chairperson Justice Rita Makarau says the commission is now in charge of voter registration and will embark on a nationwide voter registration campaign once the commission finishes analyzing data collected from voter registration conducted for two upcoming by-elections in Mount Darwin West and Chirumanzi Zimbabwe constituencies. Ivan Chifera reports.
Briefing Parliament's Justice, Legal and Parliamentary Affairs Portfolio Committee on the Commission's preparedness for the by-elections, Makarau said they would not use the discredited Registrar General Compiled Register, but they carried out their own registration from 26 January to 10 February.
We have started off with a pilot project for these two constituencies and the two by-elections. It is our hope that once we have gotten it right with these two constituencies, then we roll out a nationwide program to register voters throughout the country. Currently, we are not registering voters throughout the country because we are simply trying to test it out using the by-elections as testing ground.
She said the voters' roll combined for the two by-elections scheduled for 27 March would determine whether the commission is ready to effectively manage the country's voters' roll. Following the amendment of the country's electoral law following the 2013 elections, in which the voters' roll was largely disputed by opposition parties, the entire administration of the elections, including voter registration, is now done by the Electoral Commission. Makarau said preparations of the by-elections were on course, with voter education having been successfully conducted by the commission together with the Zimbabwe Election Support Network. She said most civil society organizations did not participate in the exercise, adding it was probably due to lack of funds. Makarau said though the commission had requested $2 million for the two by-elections, the Treasury has released $1.5 million for the polls.
This budget also included the requirements by the Zimbabwe Republic Police, and the cumulative figure was US $2.143 million. That is the amount that we asked for. Treasury approved and released a budget of 1.473 million. And the variance was mainly due to a reduction in the daily election allowances, sorry, for the officers from $55 per day to $40 per day.
The commission, she said, would recruit 865 election officers for the polls that would be contracted to about 140 polling stations in the two constituencies. She added the commission faces transport problems because of its aged fleet and the reluctance by the Central Mechanical Equipment Department to hire out vehicles over a $3 million debt outstanding from the commission's use of CMED vehicles in the 2013 elections. The two by-elections are being held to fill the parliamentary seats left by former Deputy President Joyce Mujuru and one of the current Vice Presidents, Emmerson Mnangagwa. Five candidates, including Mnangagwa's wife, Auxilia, will battle it out in the Chirumanzi, Zimbabwe, while four candidates will fight it out in Mount Darwin West constituencies. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Political temperatures are rising again in the ruling ZANU-PF party with the return of First Lady Grace Mugabe from the Far East, paving way for the disciplinary hearings of former Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa for alleged insubordination and bringing the name of the party into disrepute. The committee is led by Vice President Pelegezela Mpoko. Other committee members are Secretary for Women's Affairs, Mrs. Mugabe, ZANU-PF Political Commissar, Sevia Kasukuere, Secretary for Legal Affairs, Patrick Chinamasa, Secretary for Youth, Pupurai Togarepi, and a Politburo member, Kembo Mohadi. ZANU-PF spokesman Simon Kayamoyo last week said the absence of the First Lady had delayed the Mutasa hearing. The party remains largely divided as alleged backers of former Vice President Joyce Mujuru continue to be paged. Studio 7's Blessing Zulu first asked Mutasa if he is attending the hearing, whose composition his sympathizers are questioning.
Well, if they invite me, yes, I will attend.
But one of your colleagues, Mr. Gumbo, was saying that the composition of that particular committee that is dealing with your case is biased, and he was advising you not to go.
Not only that, the committee itself is not constitutional. It's just a special committee, which I believe was just set up for me. I don't think that it is the legal status which comes or is derived from the Constitution. You see, in the Constitution, the national chairman is the chairman of the disciplinary committee, and then he has a number of other people, including the Secretary for Legal Affairs, the Secretary for Security, and so on. But this one was just appointed by the Politburo, and in the sense that we do not recognize what transpired at the so-called Sixth Congress, it means that what it has done from that time up to now is also not recognizable.
Then how are you going to attend, Honorable Mutasa, if you are raising those concerns?
Well, I will attend only out of the respect that I have for President Mugabe.
And that was former ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration Didmus Mutasa on the line from Macheke.
Vice President and National Healing Minister Pelegezela Mpoko is taking heavy blows after saying the Gukurahundi massacre in Matabeleland and Midlands provinces were conspiracies of the West that President Robert Mugabe had nothing to do with. Mr. Mpoko angered many people when he argued in a weekend interview with the Sunday Mail that, quote, Gukurahundi had nothing to do with Mugabe, nothing, That is a fact. People can say what they want, but that was a Western conspiracy. Activists and rights advocates have responded with outrage, accusing Mr. Mpoko of protesting too much in order to curry favor with his boss, who has never really denied his involvement in the killings. Mr. Mugabe has said Gukurahundi was a moment of madness that he regrets. For perspective, reporter Ntungameli Nkomo reached analyst Zenzele Ntewele, who produced a film on Gukurahundi a few years ago.
I think Mpoko has started this process of healing on a wrong note, because currently his mandate was not to tell us who did what. His mandate was to come and make the playing field level, to open the channels of dialogue. And by starting this channel of dialogue by lying and accusing the West of doing ABCD, he has already closed other channels of communication, because already many people are angry with what they said and they are not likely to cooperate. And you remember that on 13 August 1981, actually Robert Mugabe said the Central Central Committee had agreed to form Gukurahundi. And it was Joshua Nkomo who asked him, why do you have to say that the Central Committee agreed to form Gukurahundi when it's a national army and it's supposed to be get approval from Parliament? It is also documented that the likes of Sydney Sekeramaya actually said Zambia needed a loyal army that was going to deal with the dissidents. So if you look at Gukurahundi, it was actually a militia more than it was a national army. It had nothing to do with the West, but it had everything to do with Zambia. In the Central Committee at that time, the chief architect being Robert Mugabe, Sydney Sekeramaya, Hino Singala, and Emerson Mnangagwa.
Mr. Mugabe has never really wanted to talk about the Gukurahundi issue openly. Could it be him now speaking through Mr. Mpoko, or Mr. Mpoko is simply speaking for himself?
I think Mpoko is just trying to seek favor, because Robert Mugabe has never denied that Gukurahundi took place, although he has never openly acknowledged, besides saying that it was a moment of madness. So I think Mpoko is just trying to carry favor with the president by pretending or trying to blame other people who were not involved. The only thing that the Western countries did was to keep quiet during Gukurahundi, because they knew it had happened. They had the influence and the power to stop the killings, but they decided to be quiet. That was the only thing that they committed, but they were never part of it in terms of information.
Zenzele Ntewele is a human rights activist and analyst. He is also a producer of a documentary on the Gukurahundi massacres.
The Harare City Council says it's not going back on its decision to ban residents from rearing chicken in their backyards. Councillor Peter Moy of Southerton told VOA Studio 7 today that the ban has been necessitated by health allegations, in particular that some residents are feeding their chicken with antiretroviral drugs so they can put them on the market early. He, however, could not say how widespread the problem is. Moyo says council will from now on be licensing people to rear chickens in their backyards. Residents are up in arms with the city council after it warned that it would be prosecuted if they rear poultry in their backyards, as this was against the capital's bylaws. Many are complaining that in the current situation where millions of people in the country are jobless, many are surviving on rearing chickens and selling them on the open market. Harare's Health Services Director, Dr. Prosper Chonzi, insists that council bylaws promulgated in 1962 have to be respected. But residents complain things have changed in Zimbabwe and the Rhodesian bylaws should be amended. Councillor Moyo says Harare is not going back on that decision due to health fears.
Yeah, first and foremost, I would like to say that is incorrect. What we want to do is that the people should approach the city of Harare, and if they approach the city of Harare, we will then assist them to give them the license to do whatever they want to do with their chicks. So if someone just try to have his chicks at home and they start giving ARVs, that is totally uncalled for. We want the ARVs to go to the people, because they save life.
We understand that the law that is being used here is an old Rhodesian law. Why is this still being used?
For as long as the law is correct, for as long as the law is right, we will retain the laws. those laws, we actually are anti-people who rejected them, who repealed them. But as long as the laws are okay, it doesn't mean to say during the Smith era, all laws were wrong. No, that is not correct.
That was Harare Southerton Councillor Peter Moyo speaking on the line with Studio 7 from Harare.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
A look at regional and international news.
Egyptian and Libyan warplanes carried out airstrikes today against the Islamic State group in eastern Libya, the military said, in retaliation for militants beheading 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians who were kidnapped in Libya.
Today is President's Day in the U.S. Millions of workers and school children are getting a day off for the annual holiday. Many patriotic and historical groups use the day for staging celebrations and reenactments of historical events.
And the day-old ceasefire in eastern Ukraine appeared on the verge of collapse today as pro-Russian separatists and Kiev's forces exchanged artillery fire in Debaltseve, the rail hub where rebels have surrounded Ukrainian troops. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington, D.C.
Local Zimbabwean charity group Kids Can, that supports families with children living with cancer, yesterday launched its annual Orange Week, marking International Childhood Cancer Day, to raise awareness on the types of cancers affecting children in the country. International Childhood Cancer Day is a global campaign to raise awareness about childhood cancer. The week is also used to galvanize support for children and adolescents with cancer, the survivors and their families. According to health practitioners, around 200 children are diagnosed with cancer yearly in Zimbabwe. Among the common types are the cancer of the brain, kidney and eyes, and cancer of the blood, also known as leukemia, among others. Kids Can is the only charity in the country advocating and raising funds for children with cancer. Bev Sebastian is the executive director of Kids Can. She speaks with reporter Tatenda Gumbo about her charity's efforts to support children with cancer in the country.
We support them in a variety of ways. First and foremost, when a child and their family register with Kids Can, we determine, you know, what their financial situation is. And if they're not able to pay for treatment because pediatric oncology is very expensive, we step in. So we are able to provide, you know, cover their bills for diagnostic testing, which is so important to help the doctors understand, you know, to diagnose them correctly and then treat them accordingly. We provide blood and blood products for those children that need it, chemotherapy drugs and other related drugs, laboratory tests. We also on the ward have, because we support Terry Nettle Hospital, which is A4 special here, so the only dedicated pediatric oncology unit in the country, and we provide a clown twice a month to come in and be with the kids. We have amazing volunteers who are very dedicated, and they come in for 2 hours once a day to play with the kids as well. We support the parents through parent support groups and for compliance, which is so important. We really want the families to come back, but we know that they are very strained. And because they come from all corners of Zimbabwe, we provide those patients who are unable to afford to come back with transport assistance as well.
How important has your organization been as you're talking about families that come from all areas within Zimbabwe?
You know, it's in a variety of ways. The parent support groups are very important. We also follow up with the parents on, you know, the telephone. We refer them to partners in community. Those patients who have poor prognosis, for example, we try and make sure that they get what they need in their community. So, for example, morphine. And in a case where a child does pass away, it's very important for us that the parents get bereavement counseling. So we follow up with them and constantly and find out how they're doing. Very important for us is the compliance, so to get the kids back. When it comes to teenagers and adolescents and younger children, sometimes there's family dynamics going on and we pick it up and we try and intervene when necessary. So, for example, we've got a young lady at the moment who we're supporting. She's about 14. And she has been missing a few of her appointments and leaving her medication behind. So a bit of rebelling, if you will. And we've assessed her and found out that she's got a couple of dynamics at home. Her mother's been divorced now and she's living with a different family member. So we've managed to step in and really just say, hey, we're here for you. And we know this is really tough because it is really tough.
Speaking on the issue of resources, how are you finding your organization in regards to resources? These families able to get by? Are they able to afford what is needed to help their children survive?
Without Kids Can, the answer would be no. That's why we are so important. That's why we are such a lifeline with children with cancer here. So, I mean, one scan, for example, can cost up to $1,000, which is very unaffordable. Chemotherapy drugs are very expensive. And also, you know, the counseling services that we offer and the support that we offer actually when the child is being treated is really important. So, no, a lot of families are not able to afford that, and that's why we step in, and it's so important for us to be able to support them where needed.
And what is your plea? Of course, looking at this week, Orange Week, what is your plea in regards to that issue of resourcing? How can that be alleviated, if any way?
You know, if you visit our website, kidscanzimbabwe.org, there is a film that talks about survivors, and we believe that children deserve the right to the fight to survive cancer. Children respond incredibly well to treatment. The plea is to donate a dollar or more during Orange Week and to support children with cancer. The diaspora we really want to reach. We want to say to people in the diaspora, I've met many Zimbabweans who often say to me, you know, I really want to help back home. This is your way that you can help. And it's, you know, we're the real deal, and you can make such a difference just by donating a small amount of money and really talking about the issue of childhood cancer and really showing your solidarity and support for children with cancer.
That was Bev Sebastian, the executive director of Kids Can, speaking on the line from Harare with reporter Tatenda Gumbo.
The civil servants are happy with efforts to revive the National Joint Negotiating Council after government and civil servants representatives met last week to deliberate on the long outstanding issue of the NJNC chairman and his vice. The meeting picked three names that were forwarded to Labour Minister Prisca Mufumira for consideration.
Apex Council Chairman Richard Gundani says they hope that the forum that last met in January 2014 will tackle all the outstanding issues in order to accord them an opportunity to negotiate for a salary rise.
Indeed, we met last week as the National Joint Negotiating Council, and the agenda item was to recommend names that would be forwarded to the Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare for appointment as chairperson to the National Joint Negotiating Council and alternate chair to the National Joint Negotiating Council. So it was an amicable meeting where an agreement was quickly arrived at, and those names have since been forwarded to our Honourable Minister for consideration.
What other issues were discussed, or are you looking forward to discussing now that the National Joint Negotiating Forum is up and about?
Once the National Joint Negotiating Council begins to function effectively, what we hope to do is to revisit our agreement with government at the beginning of the year 2014, which agreement was in two parts. The first part being remuneration, which was premised on the poverty bottom line for the least paid civil servant. So we would like to revisit that to make sure that everybody, every worker in government, at least earns an amount of money which is at the poverty bottom line.
Apex Council Chairman Richard Gundani on the phone from Harare with Studio 7.
Remember to stay tuned for Studio 7 when we are talking about Harare City Council's move to ban backyard chicken rearing. That's it for tonight. My name is Chris Gande.
And I'm